So we're revving the kernel in a service pack. Tell me about that.
Thanks for that question. The idea of changing or upgrading a kernel in a service pack years ago has been completely against our own thoughts of an enterprise operating system. So it was a rather crazy idea to bring into the game last year if we should not do that. And the idea here is that the kernel community has meanwhile developed also certain processes, as all older or established communities do, which maintain a certain level of compatibility and backward compatibility while not destroying the ability to invent new stuff dramatically and with high speed. And there is a confidence which has been proven true during the development process of 11SP1, that the kernel people within Novell and outside of Novell are really able to maintain and configure a newer kernel in a way that is nearly a drop-in replacement for the old kernel. That's the summary of the trust in the community and in our own engineers and the engineers outside.
Okay.
So now why are we doing it, right? That's the most interesting question. There are two major reasons. The one is hardware. And hardware here not only means storage or network drivers, but hardware means that also in the area of graphics adapters, there is a dramatic pace of development. And you may say, you are a server guy, why are you taking care about graphics adapters? But I do, because a server does not only mean the 5,000 blades in the data center, but server also means that you have small and medium business who want to maintain their server with the graphical operating system locally on a display, who want to use the graphical YAST and who have to use because they don't have an administrator doing all the nasty stuff on the command line or scripted auto YAST or whatever, but they really do it as they would administrate a GUI-based operating system, which are also out there, and there are a lot of those, right?
That's true.
So we figured out that there will be in the future, that was last year, it's already available now, that there will be server systems which will have built-in graphics chipsets which will not work properly with the old stack. And you have to learn that the kernel and X-Window community decided to move certain parts of the X-Window driver, so the part of the graphical subsystem in Linux, X-Window, which talks directly to the hardware, they decided to move that from userland to kernelland. You will say, oh, stop. Why do you do that? It is because of speed, and it's because of improved capabilities which you have in kernelland.
Right.
So what happened is that so-called kernel mode setting facility was introduced into the Linux kernel with 2.6, 2.29, or 2.30.
Yeah.
And we learned that we will have to support this somehow. And we also learned that upcoming mainly Intel chipsets, but also others are jumping on the train now, will only be built on KMS. That was the first reason. The second reason was that we had some followed the development of the upstream mainstream Linux kernel very strongly and very deeply since we developed SUSE Linux Enterprise 11 GA version. We have done a lot to improve 2.6.27. Many of our patches went into 2.6.28. So we knew what is in there, mainly in the area of the scheduler. There has been a lot of development over the last 12 months. Scheduler means performance or latency. It means that you have capabilities in kernel resource management area, for example, which are also bound to the scheduler. It means that the operating system potentially could perform better in benchmarks, or that you could scale better with the number of CPUs or so. And in this regard, that was also an important reason to think about a kernel upgrade. Okay, to think about. We had a summarizing document, which internally consisted of approximately 70 pages of presentation, which has had an evaluation of all the benefits and the risks about what about the options to support upcoming graphics chipsets on server hardware if we do a partial kernel upgrade, so if we just wrap out the graphics part and drop the new part in.
Yeah.
If we wrap out the scheduler and drop the new part in. And then there was the point where we said, well, we wrap out the graphics part, we wrap out the wireless part, we wrap out the scheduler, and we replace all the network drivers anyways, because we are talking to all the partners and they say, please upgrade, please upgrade, please upgrade. That's not much of a 2627 kernel anymore. So we would have called something a 2627 kernel, which in the end would have been some Frankenstein thing
right.
of 2627 Franken kernel of 2627 up to 2634, basically. That's not very reasonable.
Oh, it's a lot harder to support.
Yes, it's a lot harder to support. It's not a clear message. So we started the other way around. What if we would take a newer kernel and make sure that all userland applications would remain fully supported and would work with the very low number of partners who have kernel modules which are bound to a specific infrastructure in the kernel, like storage drivers, for example, and would work with them, talk to them early enough, and discuss what we can do about this. And we found that there would not be only kernel upgrades a very good thing, but that there are other areas where we could upgrade if we are able to maintain the risk. So, what you find also in a blog that you find on CoolBlock site of Novell in January 2010 is that we have done a due diligence. So there is a toolset of the Linux Foundation which helps you to analyze if shared libraries remain backward compatible, completely backward compatible. So if the so-called ABI or API did change, there are our kernel guys who very exactly knew which changes and configuration details they had done for 2627 in /11GA and what they would have to do to maintain a maximum compatible kernel, even on a newer kernel-based version. I did test it myself, that's not a proof, but during the early beta phase, I just took the beta 1 kernel and put it on my /11GA system. That worked.
And it just worked.
Yeah. Even on a notebook. So wireless worked, graphics worked, because we had not yet changed the graphics stack. When we had changed the graphics stack, I certainly needed more stuff from the new SP1. But the interesting thing is we found that we could even upgrade the glibc, because there is some functionality in the newer glibc which helps us to get crypto and floating point functionality from very recent chips and CPUs from Intel and IBM. We did a deep analysis and we looked at the promise of the glibc maintainers. We found these guys are really proud about backward compatibility. So if you have a glibc, you can prove that today. If you have a glibc compiled program which only needs the glibc, right, from /8, you just take this and put it on your /11 SP1 and
that's
it will
nice.
Run.
Stability.
They really do maintain that level of stability. So we decided, looking very, very deeply into the glibc, that we are able to upgrade the glibc without destroying any certification on the ISV level that exists in /11GA. We have talked to the ISVs and we have done not only check scripts, but certification suites together with some partners, which show that this is really compatible and remains compatible. So the kernel level was solved. As I said, we would have exchanged a lot in the kernel anyway. So there may be some very rare driver situations where partners would have to provide a newer driver for /11 SP1. But that's covered. The glibc userland is no problem at all, because that's just a common sense across the community and a provable situation that this is fully backward compatible. And we also found that there are other parts where it would be good to upgrade. Also talking about partners here, you know that Novell is partnering with Intel and Nokia in the MeeGo project.
Yes, yes.
And we have one library of Nokia, by the way, on our system for years already, which is Qt, or Qt, as some people say. This also has a promise of backward compatibility. And we decided to upgrade the Qt in SLAS 11 SP1 as well, which also works smoothly. Now, the question comes always, if someone is talking about Qt, the question comes about GTK. We also did an analysis here. Again, we had our engineers and the desktop team jumping on this and looking into compatibility levels. And we found that the glib2 and GTK plus libraries, which are the basic libraries of the GNOME stack, are also backward compatible. That was not always the case. So some people had remembered that this was not always the case, but it was the case in here. And this is why you find a upgraded KDE, which is based on Qt, an upgraded GNOME, an upgraded kernel, and an upgraded glibc on SLAS 11 SP1 without breaking compatibility on the ISV level. And you know, we are the Linux Enterprise operating system with the most certified ISV applications, so it's of high interest for us to not break anything in this area.
It's really nice to be able to have that ISV certification crown now, especially when some other of our competitors have been touting that in the past. So it really makes sense how we don't want to lose that.
Indeed. And we really try to maintain a high level of compatibility here. We have check scripts there. We also have done some tricks, so to say, to not break compatibility. So I talked about X-Window, for example. An important thing here is to learn that we exchange the X server, which basically is the graphics driver in the Linux system. What we do not exchange, the X libraries. This is where userland applications build on if they want to use graphic functionality. So that's how we maintain this. So we make a split between the driver part and the userland part, which is a little bit harder to maintain, but which allows us to have this compatibility even for graphical applications coming from SLAS 11. Which means if you have an application certified for SLAS 11, regardless of server or desktop, it will run on SLAS 11 SP1.
And so it sounds like almost we could be seeing kernel revs in subsequent SPs, like we're seeing it with SP1, depending on what we see, that's a wait and see.
The current state is that we do not plan to upgrade the kernel version again. We could only do that this time because there were enough reasons and because we were able to maintain compatibility. For the future, we expect the kernel community to improve or increase or change rate in specific areas so that we cannot follow. It would not make sense. That's the one thing. And the second thing is that we think that for enterprises, also the psychological level of having a kernel version change is too high to justify. So, for example, some customers have rules that they need approval for new versions introduced in their stack. So if you're talking about governmental areas or so, they need to have approved every version. So they get SLAS 11 SP1 approved, and then they don't want to have to run their approval process internally again and again and again.
Right.
And the same is true for ISVs. They want to have a stable base, and they want to have the good feeling that this is a stable base. As said, for the move from SLAS 11 GA to SLAS 11 SP1, we maintained the stability, we can prove the stability, and we have test procedures, certification procedures in place who can confirm this. For the future, we even could do the confirmation, but the idea of an enterprise operating system is not to have a rule to exchange everything with every service pack.
Correct.
But the rule is to have very, very stable and solid interfaces. So from my perspective, the kernel change in SP1 was an exception, not the rule. However, and this is a true comment, there are other packages where I indeed see version upgrades becoming more regular than not doing version upgrades. To give you two examples, both are desktop, Firefox.
Right.
The Firefox community is aggressively going forward. They do not maintain their stuff too long. They also apply a lot of security stuff into newer versions, not maintaining old versions. And also customers are demanding the functionality of newer Firefox versions because they think, oh, this old Firefox 3.0 who wants that nowadays? My customer is running Firefox 3.10 at home or 4.0 or whatever we are talking about in the future. So it doesn't make sense. The same applies for OpenOffice. Here we're in a much better shape because an OpenOffice, not the binary compatibility level of the program is what we should look at, but the compatibility level of documentation formats.
Correct.
Is what we should look at. And here we have to say that, for example, the update of OpenOffice from 3.1 to 3.2, from /11GA to 11SP1, is a big benefit because the interoperability with Microsoft DocX format, for example, in the writer, OpenOffice Writer, is much better. So this means with the version upgrade, we maintain a higher compatibility than with not doing the version upgrade, which is sounds a little bit crazy, but it's the case here.
I agree with that. And again, being a Linux user as my primary desktop, it actually is very reassuring to hear that we are wanting to keep these more user-oriented packages up to date because of those very reasons.
For the desktop itself, I don't see that. So GNOME and KDE, I think we will maintain in the current level of versions. So what do we have? 2.28 and KDE 3.5, I think. So that will be the base levels for the future of SLE 11 lifetime, from my perspective. But for productivity tools, I think that's how we call it.
Right.
We will be not only willing, but also able to do these version upgrades and also across the service pack.
Okay, so are we thinking that we're going to see these major upgrades at service pack time, or will we possibly see updates to some of these like Firefox, even in between service packs if they have major releases?
Yes.
Great. Matthias, thanks a lot for sitting down with Ron and I and telling us about SUSE Linux Enterprise 11 SP1.